Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. First up, people in Canada's hog industry are likely losing sleep in 2019, worrying about African swine fever. The disease has infected pig herds in China, Vietnam, and much of Eastern Europe, and there's a realistic chance it could arrive in North America. If it was found on a Canadian hog farm, it could shut down pork exports and might cause billions of dollars in economic damage. Joining us to talk about the risk and what's being done to keep African swine fever out of Canada is Egan Brockoff, a vet with Prairie Swine Health Services in Red Deer, Alberta. Egan joins us from a meeting in Winnipeg. Thanks for coming on Between the Rows. So I guess why don't we start with kind of a basic question. Can you just tell us what we need to know about African swine fever? How is it different or more hazardous than other hog diseases?
Yeah, so African swine fever is a hemorrhagic disease of pigs, causing massive organ failure, respiratory challenges, gut challenges. And when you look at the pigs, they're just feverish. It's a very unique virus in the world. It only affects pigs. It doesn't affect any other species. It's a difficult virus to manage because humans move this virus around the world very effectively. And lastly, you know, this is a virus that has no vaccine, no treatment, and no cure. And so that makes it extremely unique in the world.
So we know that it's in China, recently got into Vietnam. It's been in Eastern Europe for a while. So how would it likely arrive in Canada or the U.S.? What are the possible vectors?
Yeah. So this is a human-driven disease. So human activity is the most likely way this virus is going to come into North America. So not likely going to come in from moving pigs, live pigs. It's going to come in from human activity. So that'll include humans bringing in illegal meat products on ships, on boats, on airplanes. It'll mean humans bringing in illegal meat products through ports of entry, so shipping containers. It could possibly come in contaminated feed products and feed ingredients from affected nations. So there's a number of different ways in which that virus will move, but human-driven activity remains our top concern. And then feed concerns, you know, feed ingredients concerns are also on the top of our list as well.
So just so I'm clear on that, so let's say somebody on an airplane coming from somewhere in China might bring some pork with them, maybe because they're bringing it to relatives in Canada or something. What is the scenario where it would get to a hog farm in Canada? Like, what is the likely path there?
Yeah, so, you know, African swine fever is interesting in that the virus really concentrates in meat and muscle of pigs. And so a pig, that goes to processing has the virus present in its meat and muscle and is processed for sausage or for some other type of cured meat, where the meat is not fully cooked. If the meat's not fully cooked, then there's a good chance that that virus will survive the process. And so a traveler, maybe they want to come over to Canada and they want to bring some food that helps them remember what home is like. They pack some sausages, they pack some little meat strips, some jerky type strips, for example. Mm-hmm. They get on the airplane. They cross the border, they arrive in Canada. Of course, Canada Border Service Agency asks them, do you have any meat products or anything like that with you? And if they choose to ignore that and just bring that meat product, you know, into the country, they get it out. They're going to visit some friends that maybe have some backyard pigs or a pet pig or even a big commercial farm. And they decide, I'm not going to finish that pork product, that little beef, little pork jerky that I brought with me. And they throw it out in the garbage, and this particular farm maybe happens to feed their kitchen waste to their backyard pigs, okay, those pigs can become infected. And that is really those steps that I just walked through, that's the classic way in which this virus has moved around the world.
Okay. So let's just shift then to imported animal feed. How big is the risk? And I guess the question is, should Canada be banning the import of animal feed or feed ingredients to reduce the risk? What do you think?
Yeah, so we have introduced, if you look at viruses like PED virus, swine Delta coronavirus, those viruses didn't exist in North America in 2012. In 2013, PED virus was introduced to North America, and it is thought that it either came in the contaminated feed ingredient or on the packaging of that feed ingredient. We know for sure then that in 2014, PED first arrived in Ontario from a contaminated feed ingredient. So since 2013, four enteric coronaviruses have been introduced to North America. So we know the threat is real. Could African swine fever move in feed ingredients? Absolutely. There is good peer-reviewed published research to show the virus could survive transport across the ocean in our current shipping models, and that the virus could survive all the way to a feed mill. So the risk is real. Now, should we ban? Banning is an opportunity. Could we do other things to mitigate the risk? Yeah. We know if we store this, if we store feed ingredients at time and temperature, that we could kill the virus as well.
Okay.
But the packaging is also a risk too, right? And so, one of my last trips to Asia, I toured around different feed packaging sites. And I mean, there's a lot of feed dumped onto the concrete ground before it's put in bags and put into pallets for shipping. But those wheels that are pulling in and out of the dumping area, they've been outside on the streets. And so it can also be the packaging as well.
Okay. So obviously the federal government is aware of this issue. Canada's hog industry is very aware of the risk and taking steps to keep it out. In your opinion, what more needs to be done to keep African swine fever out of Canada?
Yeah, the pork sector has been spending a lot of time with the CFIA, with Canada Border Service agencies, and with the various ministries to make sure our voice has been heard on this. And so, we're asking for more detector dogs at the airport. Detector dogs are probably the most effective tool for monitoring incoming travelers that are carrying illegal meat products that may contain this virus. So detector dogs are critical. Understanding the different feed ingredients of non-animal origin that are coming into Canada has been one of our big goals. Figure that out. Talk with the brokers. Talk to them about storing the feed. If we store feed at 20 degrees Celsius for 20 days, an ingredient like lysine or a soy-based ingredient, we can kill the virus. And so getting people to consider, storing products at time and temperature. Also talking to CBSA about shipping containers. Mm-hmm. People don't have to just bring it in on an airplane. They can ship it, across in a ship, in a sea can. People can ship meat products illegally. They can mail meat products illegally. And so how do we do a better job with detector dogs and with secondary inspection at our borders for those types of concerns? And so those are some of the core areas that the sector has really highlighted, that Government of Canada needs to take strong positions on.
Okay, last question for you. So of the diseases you've dealt with in your career, how concerned are you about African swine fever? Could we manage the impact on Canada's hog industry if this disease actually got here?
So African swine fever is certainly a unique disease. I think of PED virus, right? PED virus came into Canada in 2014. When it arrived in Manitoba, it had a devastating impact on nursery pigs. The virus spread quickly and killed lots of animals. PED virus is way different, though, than ASF. ASF virus is a reportable disease, but it moves slow. And so, you know, we won't see this virus spread nearly as rapidly as PED, but the impact on our border and on our markets are going to be monumental, right? We'll have border closure, and those, you know, and that means every producer tomorrow has to find, you know, will no longer have a market for their pork. And that's very concerning for me.
Okay. Well, thanks, Egan. I've been speaking with Egan Brockoff, a vet with Prairie Swine Health Services in Red Deer, Alberta. Thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer, and this is Between the Rows. For years, it's been one of the hottest topics in information technology. It's also one of those things that nobody really understands. I'm talking about blockchain, a technology with endless promise and possibilities. One of those possibilities is now a reality, as an Alberta brewery is using blockchain to tell its farm-to-glass or farm-to-bottle story to consumers. Joining me to talk about this blockchain beer is Jennifer Blair, a reporter with Alberta Farmer Express. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first off, who in Alberta is producing this blockchain beer, and can you tell us what they're doing?
Yeah, so this blockchain beer is a really cool collaboration between Last Best Brewing, Hamel Farms, Red Shed Malting, and Canada Malting. So essentially what they've done is follow the farm-to-glass story of malt barley produced at Hamel Farms all the way to the final product, which is a box-style beer brewed at Last Best Brewing in Calgary. So each step of the process was documented in a blockchain with pictures, videos, interviews, and other files that beer drinkers can access if they're curious about how this beer was made.
So somebody would then go, like, with on the website or with their smartphone? Like, how would somebody access this information?
So each can of blockchain has a QR code that people can scan to see the different stages of the beer production process. So once you scan the QR code, it takes you to a landing page, and the landing page has all sorts of information about how this barley was produced, transported, and malted, and then eventually created into beer.
So I'm going to ask a dumb question, which is, can you kind of briefly explain blockchain? Because it's something I definitely do not understand. What does it mean in simple terms?
Well, I'm by no means an expert, but, you know, essentially it's a little like a public ledger where digital information can be shared but not copied or corrupted. So each piece of information or block is linked together in a chain and then stored in a public database that no one person manages or owns. So as a result, it's well suited to things like traceability, where people need to guarantee that the information they're looking at hasn't been tweaked or corrupted.
Okay, that makes sense. So if I'm a consumer and I'm drinking, you know, this beer, this blockchain beer, so what kind of information can I find about the barley that was grown in Alberta and how it was produced? What sort of information is shared?
You can essentially see everything once you've gone to this landing page. You can see, you know, what quarter section the barley was grown on, what variety they grew, how much it yielded, how much was malted, even which truck transported it from the maltster to the brewery. It really does show every step of the journey for this beer.
So I guess the key question here is that, does your average beer drinker out there actually want this kind of detailed information about the barley and how their beer was produced? Is there a real craving or demand for this sort of information?
Most beer drinkers probably don't want that level of information, and I think that's okay. You know, the information is there for beer drinkers who want to dig a little deeper into how their beer was produced, and for those that don't, they still get to enjoy, you know, really good local craft beer. Ultimately, it's up to each consumer how informed that they want to be. But it's so important that farmers and agribusinesses give them that option by making this type of information available.
So this is something that's been talked about as, you know, information tool or a traceability tool in agriculture for a while now. What's your take on all this? How significant is what's happening with this new blockchain beer in Alberta? You think this is a big deal?
Well, you know, like you said, we hear all the time about how important traceability is, not just for farmers, but for consumers as well. You know, ultimately, they do want to know where their food comes from and who produces it. So while this level of transparency might not be needed for, you know, a can of beer, it's becoming increasingly important for farmers to show consumers what they do and how they do it. You know, that trend has already begun, and it's only going to continue as technology makes it easier and easier for consumers to have a glimpse into the farms that produce their food. So for me, it's really exciting to see these farmers and businesses embracing that and proving that Canadian agriculture really has nothing to hide.
So final one, have you tried this blockchain beer yet? What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I did actually have a chance to try it on the weekend. And it's such a cool story, but the beer itself is also a really good beer. You know, it's kind of got a nice malty flavor, but it's still light and refreshing. So, you know, I kind of bought it for the story, but, you know, I kept drinking it for the beer itself.
All right. Well, thanks, Jennifer. I've been speaking about blockchain and beer with Jennifer Blair, a reporter with the Alberta Farmer Express. Next up, for more than 2 weeks, canola and wheat futures have been trending south. As of March 5th, nearby canola futures were trading below $460 per ton. Canola is the dominant cash crop in Western Canada, but if the price slide continues, growers might shift acres to other crops. Here to talk about canola, wheat, and other news from the commodity markets is Bruce Burnett, Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
So, I guess based on where we're at now, what do you think? Will the downturn at canola futures cause a pullback in Canadian acres of canola? What's your gut reaction to that concept?
Well, I think for the most part, a number of farmers certainly probably already made up their mind. Their rotations are set up. So will this price slide cause maybe some farmers to rethink? It may a little bit, but I think it just moves the acreage around the margins a bit. And I don't think we would see a significant decline versus, let's say, some of the other commodities necessarily. If there was a big winner in terms of an alternate commodity to plant, I would see it. The one thing that this price slide may do is it may have some farmers reconsider soybeans again for next year versus canola. In those areas that grow both crops, because the soybean prices certainly haven't slid as much as the canola price has.
So can you just remind me why that is? Like, why is canola suffering more right now than soybeans? Because obviously there still is a massive oversupply of soybeans in the U.S. What is it that's really weighing on canola right now?
Well, I think in one word, what's weighing on the markets is China. And certainly in terms of the soybean prices, the expectation of perhaps an agreement between the U.S. and China has sort of kept the soybean prices up there. But for canola, it's been all bad news for Canada. Again, today we learned that one of our exporters has essentially been banned from selling into China here, temporarily at least. So we're just getting nothing but bad news from China. And I would say certainly since January, the shipments for Canadian canola oil to China, and canola meal for that matter, have all have tailed off to China. Now, this is significant this year because up till the end of January, China represented about 46% of our canola exports to the world. So certainly a major customer this year. For at least the first half of the marketing year.
Okay. So just one more question on this topic. So what would a resolution of the U.S.-China trade war or some sort of tentative agreement mean for canola? Would it be beneficial or would it just all the benefits go to soy?
Well, I think the bulk of those benefits may go to soy. And my opinion is that probably would be only very temporary because, as you pointed out at the start, there's a massive soybean stockpile in the U.S. this year, and certainly the fundamentals will take over here at some point in time. On the canola side, this depends far more on what happens with our relationship with China, whether these exports resume. There are some, positive things about the price drop in terms of demand. We should see other buyers come in for Canadian canola because it is priced lower now than it has been through the crop year. The second thing is the domestic demand should remain very strong for our crushers because those prices are the current prices result in very strong crush margins.
Okay, so moving on to wheat. So it's also been a tough couple of weeks for wheat futures. Is this simply a supply issue? What's going on here?
This, I would say, is probably more a U.S. demand issue than anything else. And what has happened is there was an expectation that the Russians would run out of wheat and the prices would increase in Russia, and then the U.S. would take over some of those sales. And that has largely happened, except for the fact that the U.S. hasn't picked up a lot of export business here. And so you're looking at a case where the U.S. wheat exports in total are about 1.3 million tons behind last year. And the expectation was that you're going to see an increase in U.S. exports this year. So that's been causing pressure on the market. I think, generally speaking, for commodities in general, the overall concerns about the global slowdown in the economy have pressured the futures markets. And it's showing up in the commitments of traders reports from the U.S. All U.S. exchanges, it appears as if the fund money has gone short here on all the commodities. But certainly wheat is one of their favorites right now. If you add together all three of the U.S. contracts, they're about 48,500 contracts short, which is a fairly large position for funds to be short wheat.
Okay.
So certainly there's some other factors going on here that are a little bit outside that supply and demand balance.
So some just basic speculation happening here in terms of the funds and where they're putting their bet, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and the thesis is that slower economic growth will mean slower exports. Now, I think over time it's been proven that people still eat when the economy slows down, but for now that's the fund opinion, at least anyway.
Okay. Last one here. We'll just kind of shift to the, imminent arrival of spring. I mean, still a lot of snow around in Western Canada, still quite cold. Sort of what are you expecting in terms of spring planting? Will we see a delay in most areas or more like on schedule? What are your expectations right now as of early March?
Well, certainly the weather over the past 6 weeks has been pretty brutal in terms of temperatures across the prairies. And we have picked up some snow, which I think is actually a good news, especially in some of the southern growing areas of Saskatchewan, Alberta, that desperately did need to get some snowpack this year just to provide enough starting soil moisture. The forecast looks as if we're going to move into some milder weather rather than being in this below normal funk that we've seen for, as I said, almost 2 months now. So it does look like we're going to see a fairly normal breakup in terms of spring. There are some areas that have above normal snowfall, and certainly in parts of Manitoba, you're probably going to see some flooding concerns, mostly because of heavy snowpack further south that's going to move up through Manitoba.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. I've been speaking with Bruce Burnett, Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks.
Cheers, Bruce. That's it for today's show, the first one of March. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.